is Joyce Community Church, where you can wake up to the love of God, grow in Christ, and step out in service. You are listening to our weekly sermon featuring Pastor John Kyler.
Thank you, Karen. There's a commercial you're probably familiar with. There's a number of different versions of it, but it's all about the same. A woman is sitting around the breakfast table and sharing the morning, starting her day. There's a police officer, there's a professor, and there's a tow truck driver, and there's somebody else. And she said, "What's on the agenda for today?" And the police officer says, "Well, as soon as your meter runs out, I'm going to write you a ticket." She says, "Oh, great, thanks." And she turns to the professor, "What's up for us today?" He said, "Well, I'm going to move your class all the way across campus." And she said, "Oh, then I'm going to have to run to get to class on time, right, and just barely make it." He says, "Yeah, if you're lucky." And then the tow truck driver and you, and he says, "Well, that ticket you got, the car is now illegally parked. I'm going to tow it away. Just as you arrive, and you're going to scream and yell at me, but I'm going to ignore you and keep going." And she said, "Well, gee, it's a good thing I have my orange juice." Because she wants to start her day right, you know, and you never know what's coming at you. So do you have your orange juice? Jesus, at the end of Matthew's gospel, wants to be sure that his people are ready for what's coming. And that what coming is really a period of time in which he's going to delay. We're going to be trapped in between times, in between his coming, his first coming and his second coming. We've been, today concludes a short series which I've titled Kingdom People. It's been focusing on what kind of people we need to be to consider ourselves Christ followers, and how do we live in our current culture and age, given all that's going on and what's happening, that kingdom people are primarily people of the Sermon on the Mount, those key chapters, chapter 5 through 7 in Matthew's Gospel, and that begin with the Beatitudes, that kingdom people are first and foremost poor in spirit. They're humble, and they're meek, and they're merciful, they're peacemakers, they're pure in heart. They anticipate that life will be hard, and they still give glory to God anyways. We've looked at a number of other issues as it relates throughout Matthew's gospel, and something that what I've been doing is actually taking large portions of Matthew's gospel and looking at the central themes in those portions, which are center around five major teaching elements or discourses in the gospel. And this morning, I'm bringing us to the conclusion, or that last discourse, which talks about the end of history and what kind of people do we need to be as we think about that reality. Just as a side note, next week, as we begin the first Sunday of Lent, launch a new series which I've titled Paradigm Shift, and we're going to take a look at all that follows out of that will be relate to John chapter 13 and the washing of the disciples' feet and the Lord's Supper. And another way to think about that is that Jesus came to launch a revolution, and we see in chapter 13 of John's gospel that the tools of his revolution are a basin and a towel and a communion table. And that will continue our theme, but take us in a little bit of a different direction as we think about what it means to represent Christ in a revolutionary way. That Jesus came and he redefined authority and influence and power through servanthood. And so we'll take a closer look at that. But from the very beginning, people of God have identified their relationship with God as a journey. That Abraham started out, he left the place of his fathers, and he traveled to a place that he did not know. And this image or idea of journey is characteristic of what it means to be a child of God. That Jesus, when he invited us, he said, come, follow me. He was inviting us on a journey. Now, wrapped up into that image or that understanding of faith as a journey comes the notion that it has an end, that there is a destination to it, and that people of faith are people who live with the end in view, that where they're going meant, and there's some wonderful images of hope that in that, and I'll come to back to that, Lord willing, some other time, but Matthew, Jesus, at the end of Matthew's gospel, is wanting to be sure that we begin to live, or that we remember to live our life and our ethics out of, with a view to the end of where we're going. Jesus had been teaching. He had just earlier, at the end of chapter 23, he condemns the Pharisees and the scribes with a ripping sermon where he calls them a brood of vipers and a bunch of snakes and empty tombs that smell like dead men's bones. It's like, I'm going to save that one for next week for you guys. But anyways, and then he gets to this, they walk by the temple, and Jesus says, you know, guys, there's going to come a time when all the temples, all the stones in this temple will be scattered about. And it'll be a terrible time, a devastation. And the disciples come to, and they ask him, Lord, when will all this happen? And what will be the sign of the coming of the end of the age? And what follows is Jesus begins in chapter 24, verse 3 and 4. He says, watch out. Make sure that no one deceives you. Because, and then the description that follows, the end of the age, is a rather bleak description. At the end of it, in which Jesus describes in a prophetic way, he speaks about events that are about to take place in the history of Israel, particularly the fall, the destruction of the temple as the Romans come in 70 AD, but also something that is yet to come at the end of the age. So there's this two levels of prophecy here that Jesus speaks out or speaks about. And he says that the coming days will be filled with difficulties and distractions. It'll be a mess, and your job is to live faithfully. Those days will be filled with wars and natural disasters and famine and persecution, and there'll be false prophets who will come and say, look, I'm the Messiah, come and follow me. There'll be deception, and Jesus is in the... As he draws a conclusion, he says, don't worry about the specific chronology of the end. There will be wars, rumors of wars, destruction, famine, natural disasters. Those things are going to come. They've always come, and they will come again, but the end is still yet to come. Don't worry about that. What you need to focus on is being ready for the end, because then the Son of Man will come. And as he launches, then he goes on to explain that with a number of parables. And I read one of them for you, the parable of the faithful servant. And there's three others: the parable of the 10 virgins, the irresponsible servant, or it's also known as the parable of the talent, or the parable of the bags of gold, and then the parable of the sheep and the goats. There's several themes. My device just got disconnected. I'm not sure that's helping, but all right. Anyways, I might need you to move those for me. So there's four parables that Jesus lays out, and there's a common themes that run through each of them. First is the theme of warning or instruction, watch out. And this theme of watching out or paying attention or being ready ties all the parables together, and which makes, you know, and then there's this other idea that the hour of Jesus' return is unknown, that there's a delay that characterizes the time in which we currently find ourselves, that we're living in, as we wait for Jesus' return. And then there's this idea of judgment or separation that occurs when there's a sorting out between the righteous and the unrighteous, which is characterized by joy and inclusion or sorrow and exclusion. There is this in the first story that I read for you, the story of the faithful servant. This is kind of a familiar scenario in which you might imagine that two brothers are left home alone while their parents go off on a vacation, and they think it's a good time to invite the neighborhood kids over for a party, as well as some of their cousins. And all of a sudden, the house is trashed, there's a couple broken windows, and mom and dad are coming back into the driveway. But there's enough time to shoo them all out the back door, have them run away. And Jesus tells the story of the faithful servant who, you know, the master goes away, he leaves him in charge of the household, but if he turns out to be a wicked servant and then ruins the house and trashes it, and the master's comes back, what will happen to him? And it all centers around verse 45, who is the faithful and wise servant? So Jesus is talking about who is the faithful and wise servant. It's the one that the master finds being responsible when he returns. And then there's this conclusion here that so, but suppose the servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and then he begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with drunkards, and the master of the servant will come home on that day that he does not expect, and he will cut him to pieces and assign him to a place with the hypocrites where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. I think this is a good point to address some of this harsh language that comes at each of the end of these parables. There is, at the end of the parable of the 10 virgins, there's five who get in and five who are left out in the dark. Parable of the irresponsible servant, what he has is taken away from him and he is thrown into utter darkness. And then the goats, they're thrown into eternal fire. This is some very strong prophetic language. And its intent is to shock and startle us. It's to grab our attention and make us uncomfortable. It highlights the ruthlessness of the ancient world, but it's not to be intended to be taken literally. God is not some character out of a bad HBO movie series. The language is hyperbole. God is not going to cut people in pieces. It's really about that language of cutting is about these people are assigned the place of hypocrites. They're divided, and their true identity will be revealed. What the imagery teaches is that there will be, and this applies both to reward as well as it does to judgment, is that there will be extreme joy and inclusion. Come, beloved of my Father, and enter in and take your rest. And there will be extreme sorrow and exclusion. Take what he has away from him and throw him into utter darkness. The language is used as hyperbole and shock value. It's intended to make us uncomfortable, and it does. And the point is there so that we get the seriousness of what Jesus is talking about. Remember, we are people of grace, but with grace comes responsibility. And Jesus wants us to take that seriously. We sing about, come as you are, just as I am, with one little plea. Jesus says, come as you are, but he doesn't expect us to stay as we are. He's coming to transform us into the image of Christ in ever-increasing glory, as Paul writes. So there's this parable of the faithful steward. You know, how did I get over there? Anyways, forget this stuff. Anyways, so there's a parable of the faithful steward, and the question, the chief question around it is, who is the wise and faithful servant? So then Jesus goes on to explain who the wise and faithful servant is with this parable of the 10 virgins. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but no oil. And the wise ones, however, took enough oil for themselves and to have later for their lamps. But the groom was delayed in coming. And then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish one said to the wise, give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out. No, they replied, there won't be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were out to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived, and the virgins who were ready went in, and the wedding banquet began. The ancient wedding ceremony began with a procession in the evening. After the sun would go down, the bride would be dressed and ready and waiting in her father's house for the groom to arrive. He would come from his house to her house, and then he would take her home, and she would be his wife. And the groom would come, and his arrival marked the beginning of the celebration. And outside the bride's home would have been the bridesmaids, who were waiting there with their torches in order to lead the procession back to the groom's house. The parable revolves around the delay of the groom. Don't get distracted. Stay focused. Be ready. The time or the hour of Jesus' return is unknown, so be prepared. Verse 2, there were 5 foolish and 5 wise virgins. Matthew wants us to know that he is thinking about the wise and faithful servant. He begins by drawing our attention to who is the wise and faithful servant, the one who is prepared and ready and watching, who is prepared when the bridegroom comes. And Jesus moves on to the parable of the 10 bags of gold, or you probably know it more commonly as the parable of the talents, where a man is going off and on a long journey, and before he does, he calls the servants together and he gives them some money. He says, here's some money, I want you to invest this while I'm away. So he goes away, and after an unknown period of time, he comes back and he calls his servants together for him. And he calls the first one, and he said, I entrusted you with some money. What did you do with it? And he says, well, you gave me 5 bags of gold. Look, I have earned 5 more. Here's 10 bags of gold. And the master says, wonderful. You have done well. Now you can be responsible for more things in my kingdom. And then the servant with two bags of gold, he says, look, you gave me 2, I invested it, now I have 4. This is great. And the master says, this is wonderful, well done. And then he calls the third servant to him, and the third servant hands him 1 bag of gold. See, I took what you gave me and I buried it in the ground, and it was safe and secure. Here's your gold back. And the man who received 5 bags of gold, the master said, you are entrusted with 5 more. And the one who had received 2, he was entrusted with 2 more. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Well done, good and faithful servants. But to the man who received 1 bag of gold and hid it in the ground, the master said, you're a wicked and lazy servant. I entrusted you with this, and you've done nothing with it while I was away. Why didn't you put the money in deposit with the bankers that I might receive interest. And you know, the parable goes on to describe his perspective of the master as being a hard and wicked master, which the master replies by saying, if that's what you thought, then you should have certainly invested this instead of burying it in the ground. And the punchline is that whoever has will be given more, and those who do not have, what they do have will be taken from them. And Jesus is again explaining, what does it mean? Who is the wise and faithful servant? The wise and faithful servant is the one who is prepared when Jesus returns. And the wise and faithful servant is the one who acts responsibly with what he or she has been given. Primary question is, if you want to be prepared for Jesus' return, you'll act responsibly with what he has given to you. That holds true for churches as well as for individuals. Then Jesus moves on to the more familiar, maybe, of the three, is the parable of the sheep and goats. And here, the narrative changed a little bit in that the delay is over. The king has returned. And the king is Christ, who comes at the end of the age in all of his glory with his angels. And he will sit on his glorious throne, and the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another, the way a shepherd separates sheep and goats. Now again, here's a little bit of language of hyperbole, just for the sake of illustration, that all the nations are gathered together. They don't look like goats. They don't look like sheep. They're still people. And Jesus is just saying, the time is going to come when the king separates the righteous from the unrighteous. And he will say, he'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. And the king will say to those who are on the right, come, you blessed of my Father, take your inheritance in the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And those on the left, he will say, depart from me. You are cursed into eternal fire, reserved for the devils and his angels. And then those on the left will say, what? What did we do wrong? And the shepherd will say, it's not what you did, it's what you did not do. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you didn't give me anything to drink. I was a stranger and you didn't welcome me in. I needed clothes and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you didn't look after me. And they respond, are you sure, Lord? Maybe you have us confused with somebody else. When did we see you naked, hungry, thirsty, and sick or in prison? And he says, look, whatever you didn't do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you didn't do for me. So who is the faithful and wise servant that it will be prepared for Jesus' return? It's the one who acts responsibly with what he or she has been given by living a life that is characterized by love and mercy. The one who is faithful is the one who has a life that is characterized by love and mercy. And sometimes it's easy to fall into the posture of, okay, now I have to go do these acts of love and mercy. I have a checklist now of things I got to do. I got to go find the naked. I got to give them clothes. I got to find the hungry. I got to give them food. I got to find the thirsty. I got to give them drink. I got to go visit prisoners. Man, I don't have time for all of this. But Jesus isn't here saying these are now a set of things that you have to perform. But rather he's saying that those who are faithful and wise servants, who are prepared for when Jesus returns, who are acting responsibly with what he has given us, are those whose life reflect the love and mercy of Christ himself. In other words, we cannot claim to be identified with Jesus if the evidence of love and mercy is missing from our lives. We are called to live faithfully to the end live faithfully in light of the end and not be distracted. Remember when Jesus was a little boy, he was missing from the family. They were coming back from the festival and he got lost in the crowd, and Mary and Joseph went back to Jerusalem to find him. And they found Jesus at the age 12 standing in the temple talking to the priest and the teachers. And they had a little dialogue with Jesus. Says, why did you make us crazy? Why did we have to come look for you? And he says, did you not know that I would be about my Father's business? How do we live in light of the end? Is that we stay busy, that we be about the Father's business. That includes not just living by a code of ethics, but it includes an attitude of being ready and watching. It's a watching not in terms of just standing there and looking out the window. It's the watching of a night watchman who's posted as a sentry on the city to be protecting, to be alert, to be awake, to be vigilant. And you and I easily fall asleep by the so many things that we get involved in, even good things and busy things. There's an attitude. There's a commitment, like the commitment of the wise maidens who are prepared for the wedding. They show up. They're ready to go. They're prepared. They're focused. There's an attitude and there's a commitment. And then the parable of the sheep and the goats tells us there's a lifestyle that goes with it. It's a lifestyle that reflects the character of Christ himself. As people of love and mercy, as kingdom people, really, the question for all of us in these days, whether or not we're in the last days, who knows? What we do know is that we're closer than ever before. Right? Yeah, see? And that, I don't want to say, I want you to remember that there's two pieces here. That there is well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the rest that has been prepared for you since the beginning of the world. Now, we're not called to sort out the sheep and goats. That's Jesus' job, and he's assigned that to the angels, actually. He hasn't delegated it to you and me. That's not our job. Our job is to live as people of the kingdom and to trust that God's got the hard things that we can't understand and we're trying to figure out, that he's got that worked into his plan somehow. You know, the thing that Jesus wants us, his people, to know, this is this last serious discourse before his crucifixion. And he wants his disciples to know there's going to be a delay. All that you dream, pray, and hope for isn't going to come right away. So you have to adopt the attitude, the commitment, and the lifestyle that will keep you faithful until I do return. Don't get overwhelmed by how prosperous the wicked are these days, or the joy and ease that they seem to be enjoying. Your task is to keep oil in your lamps and be vigilant until I come. Let us pray.
Thank you for listening. To find out more, check us out at storieschurch.org.